We're having a special class on tips on how to connect to prayer. I want to begin, after hearing all these different comments and questions, I want to begin with an analogy. But before we begin, you know there's excellent chont in there. Okay. So I want to begin with something that some of you have experienced, some of you can imagine experiencing, and the reason I think it's important goes back to a class we had almost a decade ago. The guys came and said to me, we want a class on the laws of Yichud. On Fridays, we used to have 45 minutes on Halacha, Friday mornings. And there's a new group of guys, they all have girlfriends and whatever. So I said, I don't want to give you a class on laws of Yichud. And they said, but we want one. And I said, I don't see any logical reason why you guys should have a class on the laws of Yichud at this stage of the game. First learn about keeping kosher, keeping Shabbos, keeping everything else. And then down the road, we can talk about Yichud. And they said, no. And I said, yes. And they said, no, we want a class on Yichud. I said, why? And they said, it's true we all have girlfriends, and it's true we're not Shomer Negiah, let alone Yichud, but we need to know where we should be headed in life. We need to know where we should go. And when they said that, they won. And the next week, they had a class on the laws of Yichud. I said, fine, that's what you want. If that's why you want the class, if you won't feel pressured to take jumps that you're not ready for in your observance level, so then I'm willing to give a class on the laws of Yichud. If that's really the reason why you want it, and you won't walk around feeling guilty all the time, you know, you've just learned about Judaism, you can't take on a million things. If you won't feel guilty, if you're really going to take it just as something to think about down the road, to know where you're supposed to be headed, then I'm willing to give a class on the laws of Yichud. So I want to begin with something that should give us a guideline as to where we should be headed. I'm not saying that this class will bring you there overnight, but sometimes it's important to know where should I be in prayer. And that's enough, very often, that's enough to help us get on track. So that's why I want to take an example of something which some of you have experienced and some of you haven't yet experienced, and that is that wonderful relationship a person has when they meet someone who they would very much like to marry. And there comes a point in the dating when you realize, I want to marry this person. And then that date ends. And you have to drop her off at home or wherever you're dropping her off. And you have to go back home. And as you leave, you turn around and you don't want to leave. And you just don't want the date to end. And you go home and you tell yourself, I wish we could have kept going. And then you go to the next date and you've been waiting for that date for so long, even though it might have just been 4 hours, because you ended it at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're starting again, whatever. Okay, so you shouldn't run your dates till 2 o'clock in the morning. But whatever, it might not have been so long between your dates, and yet you've spent the time between the end of the last date and the beginning of the next date. And you, everything else is less important because all you can think about is, I can't wait to get to that next date. So some of you have been there, and some of you have not yet been there, but you can imagine that there exists such a relationship where you're yearning for the next opportunity to be with this person. And it doesn't change. It keeps going that way. What happens in marriage is that it becomes a given that this other person is there. And that's when the person becomes annoying. Why are they talking so much? But then, when suddenly that person gives birth, and you're stuck dealing with the kids and everything else that's going on, suddenly you miss her. And not just because she does the laundry and deals with the kids, because bemet, it's there. We we take a lot for granted in life. The truth is that that's what davening should be. The Kuzari describes it, that a person lives his life and he can't wait for the next opportunity to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the highlight of his day. The Kuzri doesn't say it about learning Torah. He doesn't say it about other mitzvos. Real davening is so great for us that when you have to end the tefillah, you feel like, I wish this date wouldn't end. I'm going to miss this. And you sort of have to let yourself down because you actually have to zone back into life until you can come back and talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam again. So I mentioned in a speech here now over Yom Tov that I spoke to someone this Yom Tov who told me that this year's Yomim Noraim, Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, were very difficult for him because ever since the economic crash in the United States, he's been persecuted by the United States government. He did stuff that was illegal. There's no question about it. They rigged certain things and they did stuff that was really illegal. And for the last 5 years, he didn't know if he was going to prison or not. He knew he'd have to pay millions of dollars, but he didn't know if he was going to sit, and he didn't know if they would go after everything he owned, and he didn't know how long he would sit in prison for. And he was in court for a long time. And Baruch Hashem, I'm happy for him. A few months ago, the courts ruled that he only has to pay a huge, huge fine, but they're not putting him in jail. And he said, for 5 years, my Yom Kippur looked one way. And then, now this year, I come to Yom Kippur, and I don't have this threat looming over me of going to prison. So, it's hard. It's hard. How do you connect to Yom Kippur? You know, after 5 years of having this threat, suddenly this year, Yom Kippur is a lot easier in one way, but harder in another way, because the davening is suddenly less. It's not the same. So, in one way, tefillah can have that connection when we realize we need the Ribbono Shel Olam. When things are problematic, so then, yeah, it's easy. But it has nothing to do with that. It's a cop-out. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about life. I'm talking about three times a day. The average person walks into prayer, and it's, here we go again. Okay, I got one thing to daven for. But what am I going to do with the rest of Shemona Esrei? Or, I don't even have one thing to daven for. Why do I have to stop my day or delay my lunch or actually go through this? I've done this before. What am I saying here? And we have to realize that there's a real problem. And it's a real problem with our whole approach to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Prayer is not the focus here. It's really our connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Tefillah gives us an opportunity to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, one of the reasons we don't connect to tefillah is because we don't think of it that way. And one of the reasons we don't think about it that way is because we don't think about it. Period. We walk into shul and we start. And that's the worst way to daven. I say, you want to daven? Walk into shul and stop. Don't talk. Think for a minute. What am I doing here? And if you don't do that, don't daven. If you're going to walk into shul and fire off the Shemona Esrei and walk out and, okay, I paid my dues. This must do something up there, right? I did it. God, you better be good to me, right? Because I did my thing. No. We're coming here for a beautiful, intimate relationship. And it's not going to happen if we're going to run in and run out. Now, you don't have to spend more than 60 seconds on tefillah. I'm not talking about a long tefillah. Let me tell you about my friend, the wrestler. Approximately 20 years ago, a little bit more, I was volunteering in JEP, Jewish Educational Program, JEP. JEP. I was a volunteer teacher. And they come to me, I'm all 16, right? 15 or 16. And they tell me, we have a professional wrestler who lives in upstate New York, and he's about your age, and he hasn't put on tefillin since his bar mitzvah. And he put on tefillin once, and now he hasn't put on 3 years, and he called us up, and he wants someone to give him a class on how to put on tefillin. So, what? I don't want to say. We need someone to teach him. No one's available. Could you teach him how to put on tefillin? So I said yes, and I thought no. I said, what am I going to tell him about tefillin? What do I know about tefillin? I'm all 16. So I went to a Hasidish friend of mine. Today's a Hasidish Rebbe, Rabbi Moskowitz. I said to him, what do I tell a guy like this? What am I supposed to do? What do you do? He said to me, you tell him two things. You tell him, one, all you have to do is put it on and say Shema. If you can say more, good. But if you just said the first parsha, if you said Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, you did it. If you can say the first parsha, good. If you could say the three parshas, great. Not more than that. That's it. Put on tefillin, say Shema. The other thing you should tell him is, show him that short prayer we say before putting on tefillin, which explains why we're putting on tefillin. It says, we want our arms to do mitzvos, we want our mind to do mitzvos, we want to do things the way Hashem wants him. Explain that to him, and that's it. Okay, the Rebbe told me that's what I did. Okay? No chachmas. I meet with the guy, I go over with him how you put on tefillin, and I tell him, all you got to do, put it on, say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, you're done. You want to be extra pious? You say the first parasha. You want to be even more pious? Say three parashios. But that's it. Now you want to understand what you're doing? Okay, our class took 17 minutes, be'erech. And the guy leaves, and I go my way, and he goes his way. To make a long story short, the guy is one of the top people in Meir today. In Meir, in Yeshiva Meir here in Israel. He's a top Talmud Chacham today. He's finished Shas I don't know how many times. The wrestler. The wrestler. Okay? The wrestler. Now, wait a second, but why? Why did it work? Why did it work? Because he could do something that he connected to. Like you said, I got a whole long Shmona Esrei here. What am I doing here? Wait. So don't. Stop. Take a step back. Let's do something real. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Tov me'at bechavana. Better say a little and have intent, meharbot shelo b'chavana, than saying a lot and having zero intent. So those of you who are advanced, yes, a person should say Shmona Esrei every day. You shouldn't say last night. Say, but wait, stop. You walked into shul. Connect. Think about what you're doing here. Think about a date. You show up to your wife. Everyone knows this happens. Sometimes you don't have a lot of time. But you can walk in and look her in the eye and say, I want you to know I don't have time, but I love you, and I wish I had more time. Have a good day. You walked out. It's not the same as a long date, but it means something. If right before you go into a meeting, you guys know how many times the final minute before I go into class, I call my wife to wish her a good night. We start class at 8:30. Sometimes I don't have a minute to call my wife till 8:29. But at 8:29, I'll call my wife to wish her a good night before I go into class and start class with you guys at 8:30. Because that minute means something. It means something to me, and it means something to her. I wish I had more time to talk to her. I don't, but that minute is going to be a real minute. And I can tell you I do it almost every night. Sometimes I do it for 15 minutes, sometimes for 20 minutes, but very often for 1 minute. And usually I don't have that 1 minute, but I'll do it anyways. We walk into shul, we have to view it as I'm walking into a date. I'm walking into an opportunity to connect to my Creator. It's an opportunity.
When you read his book, like to be with his wife, it's like to talk with God, and God talk throw your wife. It means when you are in this case, which choice to take? To go to the tefillah or to stay with the wife?
That's a practical question we can get to later. But I'm saying, number one, our real problem with tefillah is our whole attitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It has nothing to do with tefillah. We're here. We have an opportunity to connect. Let's think about it. I challenge you to stop before you start Shmoneh Esrei. Don't start Shmoneh Esrei. Stop, close your eyes, and think about what you're about to do. Just stop. And by the way, it's a Mishnah, it's a Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. For some reason, this one's gotten lost. But it is Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. You know, the first Hasidim used to wait an hour before they started davening. So the Halacha says you don't have to be a Hasid. You don't have to wait an hour. But you do have to stop and think.
Does that mean we somewhat from the format of the davening that we have? Seemingly, if we could only focus, say, for 10 minutes, right, is it preferable that a person, say, only say Shmoneh Esrei and walk out, maybe?
So I don't want to get there just yet. That's a halachic and educational question. So I want to get to that later. But I want, first, we have to understand what's going on here. If we would walk into prayer, stop, think about what's going on, and then daven, if we would think for a second, wait. You guys know how many children were raped in the last 24 hours? You guys know that the Daesh just raped hundreds of children and then beheaded them? You're aware of that? Or you're not aware of that? So you should just know one of the wonderful things going on the planet. You should just know. You know how many things are going on? Daesh is ISIS in English. Yeah. ISIS, yeah. Okay, so there's children. Guys, you heard me? Children, not adults, which is a terrible thing in its own right. Children. There's a lot of things going on the planet. If it's not close to you, then it's further from you. There's a lot of things, you know. People have given up on the children in Boko Haram, right? All those girls are goners. No one cares. No one's even talking about that. Suddenly, you guys know that the UN has fundraised this week billions of dollars to send to Gaza. Now, if you think it's a coincidence that last time in the UNRWA schools, they had weapons stashed in the walls, you got to be kidding yourself. They knew there were weapons stashed there. So where are those billions of dollars going to? So, well, oh, tunnels, right. Yeah, you need a lot of cement, right? It's not funny. I mean, so I'm just saying, if we stop and think about what's going on around us, and we think, I have an opportunity to talk to the power that be, the power that be, so then our davening is going to be different. But it requires a different attitude to their Ribbono Shel Olam, not only to tefillah. It says in the Gemara that there can be a drought and there will be no rain, and one Jew will stand up and daven, and that's going to change it. But he's not Moshe Rabbeinu. He's not the tzaddik of our time. Doesn't matter. When we stand up in daven, we never know which one of us is the one that holds the key. Meaning sometimes it says there was an Am Haaretz, his name was Yiftach. He didn't know too much. But he said to God, he said, you know, I heard you made miracles when the Jews left Egypt, and I heard the Jews weren't such kosher people back then. So if you did it for them, shouldn't you do it for us too? He made one claim, and it says that his prayer changed everything. But he wasn't the tzaddik of the generation. He wasn't the chacham of the generation. What was he? He was one Jew who cared to open his mouth and talk and was innovative in how he presented his claim. So what does that teach us? That means it's not necessarily contingent on the tzaddik or the chacham. It's contingent on the person who's willing to make real prayer, to really talk to their Ribbono Shel Olam. Now that's work. It's called Avodah Shebalev, right? The Gemara says that's work of the heart. It's not easy. It's hard on many levels. I remember when I was debating whether I would be observant or not. I remember walking into shul and saying, I'm supposed to do this davening thing, right? but what about everyone looking at me? Don't they think I'm weird? Because I think they're weird. Right? I said to myself, I'd stand there in shul looking around and say, he's chuckling. Does he really believe? Because I don't. I'm standing there looking as an observer. I'm standing in shul looking around and saying, interesting. And what am I doing here? Okay, I'm one of them for now. I didn't think I'd keep Shabbos or Kashrus. I admit, I in my teenage years, I was very skeptical of everything. And Judaism wasn't off limits. That's a long discussion. No. But I'm just saying, it takes a certain work because on some level, it does not work the way we'd like it to work. Meaning, you go to a slot machine, you put in money, you pull the handle. I've never done a slot machine in my life, but I've heard of how they work. You know that you put in the money and you don't know if anything's coming back, right? You walk into shul and you daven, you don't feel like that's the way it should be. Hey, I'm davening, right? Hello? Didn't I say something? I did. So wait a second, but there's no guarantee, right? It's not like I put money in the bank, so then when I put in the ATM machine, I should get it out, right? Prayer isn't that. What? Right. So that's why davening is not about, hey, I want outcome A or B or C, so I'm going to walk out of shul and now let me see it happen. No. I am going to take this opportunity to talk to my Creator, to connect to my Creator, to express to Him my concerns, and what He's going to do with it, I don't know. I mean, He is the boss. And He doesn't tell me. He doesn't clue me in. I have no idea. And if you look in Tanakh, what you see is that everyone had no idea, including Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu davens, and he does not know what the outcome is going to be. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I want to go into the land of Israel. And Ribbono Shel Olam says, no. And he says, but I really want to go in there. Ribbono Shel Olam says, no. And one of the Midrashim we're not going to get to tonight is Moshe's final day on planet Earth, where he spends the day, or a part of it, arguing with the Ribbono Shel Olam, saying, I don't want to die. I don't deserve to die. I have many reasons why I deserve to live. And every claim he makes, Hashem answers. And he makes a counterclaim, and Hashem answers. And there are pages worth of Midrashim that cover a long discussion where Moshe Rabbeinu keeps pleading. What do we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu? We learn that we don't know what the outcome is going to be. You can be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't know, but you have to keep trying. When the Ribbono Shel Olam says no to Moshe, Moshe doesn't say, okay, shucks. He says, but wait, I have another reason why I shouldn't die. And I have another claim why I shouldn't die. And he keeps going and going and going, and he goes over 500 different claims. 500 different claims. Guys, he doesn't give up. What do we do? I walked in, I told the Ribbono Shel Olam what I want, right? He knew it beforehand. I have to express it. What happens in tefillah? Tefillah comes from the word palel, clarity. Why is tefillah about clarity? Because, let me ask you, do you believe there's a God? So then the answer is yes and maybe. But I thought I'm Jewish. Isn't the answer yes? Yes, on one level the answer is yes, but on another level the answer is maybe. Wait, I'm observant. I'm not the guy you just said who stands there in shul and looks around and says, what are they all doing? I adhere to this, right? And the Chazon Ish writes that lurking in every person's heart is that little maybe that says, but I'm not 100%. Wait a second. So what am I doing when I'm davening? When I'm davening, I'm saying, somewhere inside of me, I know this is real. Both are true inside of me. Somewhere inside of me, there's a question. And somewhere inside of me, something says this is real. Which one am I going to connect to? That's a choice I don't make most of the day. I make it at some point in my life. I decide what lifestyle I'm going to lead, and I'm an observant person. But what do I do with that lurking little doubt that I have in me? oh, I try to ignore it. But wait a second, then I come to daven, and then that little doubt in me says, what are you doing? And if this is real, show me, prove it to me. Tefillah is where I clarify and I say to myself, I am willing to connect, I'm willing to talk to him, because I know that there's something real. Ah, wait a second, but it's not forecastable. Rabbon Shom, this should be like marriage. I have to plead with you that I should live. Wait a second, you gave me tasks, I'm doing them, so obviously you should give me life. Ah, no, that's what the book of Ecclesiastes is all about. You cannot forecast life. No one can forecast life. Good people have problems in their life. And even though we have 10 answers in the book of Ecclesiastes as to why that happens, at the end of the day, there's no formula. So we live in this planet, and we daven, and we have no guarantee what the outcome's going to be. We don't. We don't know if we're going to live tomorrow. We have no idea. It's one of the questions I often ask myself. How will I look back at life if tomorrow morning I'd have to look from up there instead of down here? How would I look at life? It's a tough question. Some days I say, give me another day. I got to fix something. Some days, so sometimes you end the day and you say, uh-oh. Got a lot of fixing to do, right? But tefillah comes from the word clarity. We have to force ourselves. We have to corner ourselves. And we have to say, wait a second. So I'm going to talk to him. If I can't take that step and say I'm going to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam, then prayer has no meaning. What am I doing? Oh, I'm signing the card? Give me brownie points, Ribbono Shel Olam. Look, I did it. 613 days a year, 3 times a day. I stood up here and I said those words. So what? Oh, don't get me wrong. It has value. And one of the key tools when we try to develop a healthy personality is to maintain consistency even when we lack inspiration. If a person will only work with inspiration, then they're never going to succeed in life. You're not going to be inspired every morning to go to your job. You're not going to be inspired every morning to stay married. You're not going to be inspired every day of your life to stay living. Yes, there are days when a person doesn't feel like living, and that's normal. It's part of life. Life cannot work based on just how I feel when I'm inspired. But I have to try and make most of life be an inspiration. I it's pretty sad, I don't have time to tell you the full story, but it's pretty sad when a person says, why should I keep living? What am I doing here? I'm not exactly sure. That's not so good. You need to answer that question. You can't stay too long with that attitude. Well, the same is true with tefillah. There are going to be days where I'm davening because I have to daven, and I didn't succeed, and if on a scale of 1 to 100, I got a minus 10. Okay, I walked in, I said the words, I hope, and I didn't do anything. But that can't be the majority of the days. So how do I change it? Well, I have to first think about what I'm doing. I have to think about my relationship. I have to think about the idea that this is real. And again, that means I'm going to pick sides within me. I have to do that tefillah from the word palel to clarify and say, yes, I am talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Again, this is coming from the guy who stood in shul for probably a number of years, looking around himself saying, I must look so weird, because they look weird to me. But that's a choice we make. So yeah, every guy who came to Machon Meir likes to say, I made that choice. I came to Machon Meir. What do you mean? I did tshuva. I did gear. Of course I made my choice. No. You made one choice. You made the big choice, which is great. But there's a smaller choice that we make every day. It's the choice we make when we have to decide, am I going to say that juicy piece of Lashon Hara or not? Why is it that the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch says, Shiviti Hashem Nenegdi Tamid? I place Hashem before me. Notice the word Shiviti. David HaMelech didn't say, I remember. He said, I place. Well, you place in God? Yeah, because I live life and it's as though God's not here. I have to force myself to say, He's here. Shiviti, I place God before me. Because you know what? I don't feel it. When a person eats something without a heksher, he does not feel like, ooh, lightning struck. So then you have these people who do. That's true. There are people who are very superstitious, and they say, you see, because I ate that, that's why I have indigestion. That's why my battery died. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not. Then you have a person who says, I ate without a heksher, and I suddenly have no indigestion, I'm feeling great. That life doesn't necessarily work that way. You can't assume it. You want to, you'll see it. Anyone who wants to see it in their life will. I can't tell you if it's for real or not. I don't know. I told you, I'm still a skeptic. Skepticism didn't end. So the first step is to decide when I'm davening, I'm talking to him. The second step is I'm going to stop before I start davening, and I'm going to think. I'm not going to run into it. And I can tell you that, I shouldn't tell you all my secrets, but sometimes I don't have this luxury. You know, I have to stand up there. Before I stood up there, I would sometimes stand for a minute and a half. The tzibur would be almost finishing their Shmona Esrei, and I didn't start. But that's because my mind wasn't there. What am I doing? I'm going to talk when I don't mean it? What am I? So then what's the point? And if you stand there and you think for a minute, and it, sometimes it takes a minute, then your tefillah will be different because you're really talking. Okay, next step. What?
Can you still do that whole stopping for a while if standing about a meter to the right and a foot behind?
You mean if I'm in the front? If you're in the Amud, it's a problem. It's a problem. I happen to find that davening for the Amud helps me have kavana. I have a problem keeping up speed, but it helps me with kavana. When I'm up there and I can say it out loud and have the pressure of being up there, I find it helps with kavana personally. Okay.
What time is the last bus you said?
48. We're going to stop in about 7 minutes. I want to address a whole bunch of things now, very piecemeal and quickly. I strongly recommend that people take the time to write down what's important. When I went to a certain yeshiva, I used to buy the New York Times every morning. And this was a yeshiva where, if today they're against iPhones, in those days they were against the New York Times. So I happened to board by one of the teachers of the yeshiva, and he'd walk into the dorm room. We had a very friendly relationship. He'd walk into the room I was renting from him, and he'd see the New York Times. I didn't hide it. And he'd say to me, "Why do you buy the New York Times?" And I'd say, "Because I can't daven without it." And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I don't know what to talk to God about if I don't read the New York Times. I don't know what's going on in the world. I don't know what's important. If I know what's happening in Israel and I know what's happening in the world, I know what's important. I know how to daven." And he'd say to me, "You know, yeshiva policy is against buying the New York Times, so I don't buy the New York Times. But do me a favor, fill me in so I could have kavana in my davening too." We had a very good relationship. I strongly recommend you take the time and you think about it and you add to tefillah. You can add in Shema Kolein, you could add at the end of tefillah. A person has to talk about what's real. You guys, many of you are not yet there, but when you have children, you realize how fragile life is, how much you don't have control. You really don't have control. Somehow we don't think about it about ourselves. You know how many people took a step off the sidewalk and didn't notice that car that was coming, and for life, their life is different? That's it. The rest of their life is different. And it's just one step. And we don't think about it. There's so many things we do in life. Life is very fragile. But we'll ignore that for a minute. When it comes to our children, we realize we have no control. You really have no control what's going on out there. You have no control when the kid's going to do something stupid and hurt himself. You have no control when they'll come across a bad friend. You have no control when a teacher will be harmful or improper with a child. You have no control. There's so much to daven about. I think a person has to stop and think what's important to him in life and compose a private prayer. Davening has to be real. We walk into shul. The guy standing next to me is annoying. Maybe I have to switch seats. Maybe I have to switch attitudes. If we walk into shul and we walk in with Ahavat Chinam, then our davening is going to be different. The Arizal said we have to accept Ahavat Chinam on ourselves before davening. It's even engraved, I think, on his tombstone. It's very hard to have Ahavat Chinam. It's very hard. Come on, the guy's annoying. I can give you a million reasons why he's annoying. I open the window, he closes it. I sit down to daven, he starts tapping on my chair. I try focusing, he starts humming his tune. He's clapping behind me. He pushes my bench backwards and suddenly I have less space. I can give you a million reasons why he's annoying, including the guy who smacks a towel into my face every morning as he has a lot of kavana putting it on. So wait a second. If you can really work on avat chinam, your whole davening is different. Because the truth about davening is that davening stems, we said earlier, from connecting to a part of ourselves that we often ignore that we have that choice, but it's really there all day, every day. But davening also comes from a place of humility. In order for me to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I have to admit I need him. And one of the reasons we have problems with other people, be it our spouse, be it the guy next to me, be it the guy in front of me or behind me, or the chazan who really gets on my nerves, is because we have a problem with our ego. The real problem is me, it's not him. I have a problem. What difference does it make what tune he's singing and if he's on key or off key? Oh, I like music as much as the next guy. But if I can see the broader picture and I can have the humility to connect to the truth that we're all in this together, think about it for a second. Imagine you were a group that was going on the mission of a lifetime. You're all going out there to, and the enemy, you're outnumbered and you need to fight this together. Would you really care if en route, when this guy goes, small yamin, he's a little bit off key, you wouldn't even notice. But if I don't have that humility, then I'm not even in prayer. I'm in his prayer. If I can connect to prayer, then that's inconsequential. What's more consequential is that we're working together. And avat chinam is something that changes all of tefillah. If a person can really look at the people around him with a good eye, then his whole tefillah is different. I can tell you. When I first came to the community, I didn't know anyone. It was the easiest thing to have avat chinam. Really, it was easy. I didn't know anyone. No one did me any harm, right? But try having avat chinam when on your way up to shul, someone walks over to you and blasts you to your face and tells you, you know, you did this and you should have done that wrong. And you wrote this. And you know what? There's a tshuva that says the exact opposite. And you're on your way up and you look at him and say, good morning. And the guy goes, all right, good morning. And you're feeling like 2 cents, and you don't even know half the things he blasted you for, and now he's the chazan when you walked into shul. Wait a second. But wait, does it matter? Yeah, what matters is me. No, what matters is not me. Tefillah is when I could step out of my shell and say, I'm doing something bigger. Tefillah is about Klal Yisrael. Tefillah is all B'lashon Rabbim. It's only when you get to that last line, that last stanza, that you start talking Lashon Yachid. Am I davening about Klal Yisrael? Am I connecting to Klal Yisrael? Well, it's very hard. Yeah, it's very hard because we're very stuck in ourselves. It's very hard. It's true. And that's part of the answer to the question. I walk into tefillah, I have one thing that matters to me. I'm also that way. It might be Slach Lanu, it might be Refa'enu, it might be Hashiveinu, but there's one thing I'm thinking about, but that's a mistake. All of Shmoneh Esrei is relevant. Hashiva Shofteinu Kavar Rishona. You guys know what the Bagatz is doing? They're ruling that they could build a Christian missionary establishment with 3,000 people in the old city. Okay? That the Bagatz rules that. You know why we have this old issue with Armin? Hashiva Shoftein Kvar Rishona. I think that's so hard to have kavana in that. But why? Because we don't think about it.
Well, no, the Bagatz is the high court.
Bagatz is the high court, right. I'm saying the high court here in Israel. I'm saying that it's real, but it's only real if my prayer has more to do with than me. If all my tefillah is me, so then you're right. I only have specific things that matter to me. So part of tefillah is also thinking broader, like I said, looking at the headlines, understanding what's going on in the world. And I'm not a fan of reading every article. But there's more to it than that. And again, this goes back to the other point. It's not like a slot machine. But on one level, Chazal tell us no one knows who's going to be the one that's going to change the future of Klal Yisrael. Chazal do say that individuals like me and you, and no one knows who's the one that's going to change it. But Chazal do tell us that every one of us makes a big difference. And sometimes one of us can make the difference for all of us. There's a lot more to talk about, but I want you guys to make the bus, which you have 7 minutes for, by the way. The stop is 1 minute away, and you have 7 minutes. The bus only leaves the first stop in 4 minutes. So don't worry about it. And you have a follow-up bus 12 minutes later. So you guys don't have to panic. You're on the second to last bus.